Radio.
Radio.
X.
The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
A very warm welcome to the Evening Show podcast with me, Gordon Smart, and producer Vin.
Hello.
Frantic week, Vin, isn't it?
Yeah, rushed off our feet.
Yeah, I've made the mistake of trying to juggle family down for half term from Scotland, running the job that we're doing here, and a few other things up in here as well. I've been mad.
It's been enjoyable watching you deteriorate.
Yeah, well, on Thursday, I think it was, you looked like you might be on the point of breaking down, like Michael Douglas and falling down as well. But we got there in the end, didn't we, Finn?
Yeah, and it was a lot of fun. We had some good interviews, didn't we?
Yeah, lively week. So Tom Grennan was on. He's a lovely fella. What a bright future he's got. Manix Street Preachers as well. So somebody at the beginning of their career, and then Manix, who we found out... I couldn't believe this. They've been around since 1986.
Yeah.
Now, I realise they've had a great career, but 86, that's 32 years, Vin, which is 5 years older than you?
More.
Yeah, more. It's frightening. But it was great to have them on the show. And then on Monday as well, going back a little bit further to peak Britpop, we had a classic album chat, Mosley Shoals from Ocean Colour Scene, which is one of my favourite albums. Although probably, Vin, you know, as a man who wasn't around 1998, I listened to anything other than Westlife, not for you.
no comment.
Ah, very good. Well, listen, enjoy the Evening Show podcast. Here it is.
Radio.
Radio.
X. The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
I'm absolutely thrilled to say we have Welsh royalty in the studio tonight. Welsh Dragons, they've headlined just about every festival you could imagine, picked up loads of awards, but more importantly than that, they are still writing music that really makes you think, and I've been thinking about it all week. Nicky Wyatt and James Dean Bradfield, thanks for coming in, lads.
Howdy doody.
How it's a doing? Pleasure, thank you, sir.
Can we just get something out of the way very quickly, because I've been trying to get you on the show for a long time, and then you appear 2 weeks after Wales have pumped Scotland in rugby. Yeah. Is this anything I should be concerned about?
Not at all. No. We don't do that one-upmanship. We don't. The result is enough.
Well, I do.
He doesn't. I got way too many Scots mates to kind of do that.
It's a genuine pleasure to see you, gents. Thanks so much for coming on. It's amazing to think, right? 13 albums in now, and there's new material on the way. James, this song we're going to play in a second, the new single.
Yeah.
It's one you've written and done the lyrics for, and sort of it's got your name on it.
Distant
right?
Colours. Well, no. I mean, yeah, but kind of it doesn't mean that it is entirely my creation. Because kind of Nick and you know Nick and Sean improved it endlessly because I wanted to take it in a different direction probably. No, it is. Yeah, I come up with a lyric now and again, and then Nick takes the worst lines out, and adds a couple in there just to give it weight. And yeah, it's a song about just being in a place and time where you feel as if you've left certain things behind, or perhaps the time doesn't leave you behind. And now everything becomes a bit sepia tinged, and now everything becomes a distant colour.
It really made me think, and that's something the Manic Street Preachers do. I think your music always makes your fans and people who maybe don't listen a lot think about stuff. And particularly where I come from in Scotland as well, there's a bit of the Labour Party and what's happened in the last 30 years in the song. And I think, wow, what a time to write. There's an awful lot to inspire great songwriting at the moment, is what I'm trying to get to.
There is, yeah. The song is about when you feel as if you kind of like even your own side's in a mess, whether it be culturally or politically or wherever. And it's about the confusion of just of not having those definable targets to try and strike out against anymore.
I think it was just much easier when we grew up, you know. It was easier. You knew what you stood for and you knew what you stood against, and everything overlaps these days. Everything is a miasma of digital hysteria and opinion.
Yeah.
Whereas it was just easier to kind of plant your flag in the sand when you were our age. I'm so glad we grew up when we did.
It's quite overwhelming, isn't it, now?
It is. Yeah.
I suppose when you started as a band in 1986, 87, around that time, you had to think about writing music. And we speak to so many new artists coming through who are considering their social media audience and, you know, there's so much to consider now. But do you think that damages music, or do you think it encourages it in a different way?
I think we had it easier because we had kind of absolutism. We had focus. We literally thought, cover the enemy, Radio 1, top the pops, we've made it. Yeah. Easy as that. You know, and we sent out letters to journalists. We could barely play. Well, certainly me and Richie could barely play at the time. But you had a plan which you thought you could implement if you were really disciplined and obviously a bit of talent as well. And I literally wouldn't know how to start now. We get asked to do sort of talks and stuff and give advice and mentoring and all that.
Yeah.
Everything I believe in is the exact opposite to what happens now.
To get a deal now, yeah.
Yeah,
I mean, you're asked to go to some music institute, and I literally, you know, it would be like 100 like confused cocker spaniels just looking at you, just going, "What do you want?"
Tilting their heads.
Is that how you get a record deal?
Radio.
Radio.
X. The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
I said, lads, 13th album, right? I watched the programme recently about a family who had 13 children. When you've got 13 albums, are there some that you remember a little bit better than the others, or maybe you feel slightly guilty about ignoring some of the others?
Well, number one, in this day and age, we are not going to compare having producing 13 records to childbirth, okay? I'm getting that straight, okay? But kind of, it is confusing sometimes because... if you go with the analogy of children, sometimes an album comes back to you and you kind of fall in love with it again.
Yeah.
And sometimes there's some albums that you just hate forever.
Yeah, yeah.
Hate's a strong word, perhaps.
Yeah.
They just confuse you. Some there are some records there where you know that you didn't do the best job.
But
there isn't to us much, I don't think.
One really positive thing about it, we were trying to think of other artists, other bands who have managed to have a career that survived 13 albums. And you look at the list and it's formidable, really impressive, amazing company to be in. You know, The Cure, Bowie... God, you look at loads
Stays
of
Grow,
yeah, yeah.
Slade.
I don't know if Slade got it.
I don't know if they
Springsteen.
I'll have to check that actually.
Yeah.
But that must give you a sense of real pride as well to have that longevity.
Well, growing up, that idea of looking in the rack in a record shop and seeing a band's history laid out before you was just so exciting. You know, dipping into those different, you know, buying Nebraska and then buying Tunnel of Love or something like that. You know, and I. Not that there's many record shops left, but when you do go in them and you see our rack there, it does feel nice because there's certain people who are only ever going to really perhaps buy Holy Bible, and then there's some who are going to, you know, go much more Everything Must Go and Postcards from a Young Man. So it's kind of nice. Sometimes I'll just sort of hang around our section and see who comes up, you know, what kind of people are turning up.
Well, you really stalk our section.
I did have an issue with you, actually, because in the 90s I was a teenager and I spent a fortune on Manic Street Preachers because you always had like four or five different versions of a single.
I
worked hard for £2 an hour collecting glasses to buy your music.
The golden age of formatting. We used to do, if there's any comfort to you, we would go and buy like multiple versions of things when we were younger. And so we did the same thing.
It did help me at school, though. You know, I could argue with my parents that, like, Kevin Carter, I would never have known about him unless you'd put that in a song. So thank you for introducing me to stuff like that.
Believe me, you're kind of, you know, having to, you know, write music to the lyrics has been an education for me sometimes too.
Yeah. One other thing I was going to say about the touring as well, I was looking through the dates. So the Hydro for the first time in Glasgow, for instance, a brand new venue. I mean, you'd have played a few interesting places in Glasgow over the years.
King Tut's, which is, you know, one of the great, the first venues we ever went where we had lovely food.
Absolutely beautiful shepherd's pie and lasagna. It was amazing.
Really?
Absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
It was the best, one of the best meals of my life. Because it was really cold and we were in the van and we had no money except Richie had 40 quid tucked into his sock.
Kind of thing, not to be sure.
Which we found out about later.
Yeah.
And that was amazing. I mean, like, you're right about Glasgow. We played the ABC, we played the Ritzy, we played...
Yeah. Obviously, Barrowlands.
Barrowlands. Yeah, yeah. And Barrowlands is, even though we're not playing it this time, that is the one place you can go to in Britain. The one place. There's no other venue where you go back. It just doesn't change one tiny bit. It just hasn't changed. The dressing room's nothing. Nothing's been upgraded.
It's a mess, isn't it? Yeah.
No, it's not a mess.
It's in a nice way.
It's a functioning relic.
Yeah, it is.
Just like me. before you get in there.
I tried.
Radio
X.
The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
The Evening Show. Classic album of the week.
X.
Always look forward to this. Every Monday night we have a bit of classic album chat. We delve a little bit deeper into an album we love here at Radio X. And tonight is something special for me as well because it's going back to 1996, so the year I turned 16. In fact, the month after I turned 16, Ocean Colour Scene released Mosley Shoals nearly 22 years ago, which makes me feel very old. But for many, it was a stone-cold example of Britpop. It really was peak Britpop around that time. Every penny I earned was spent on albums at HMV or Gold Rush Records in Perth. It hit number 2 in the UK, stayed around in the charts, get on this, for 92 weeks. Sold over 1 million copies in its first year and probably bought most of the band at least a small castle. The next album, Marching Already, they went in at number 1 but didn't hang around anything like as long as Mosley Shoals. So it is the band's most successful album to date. It did very well indeed. I remember these tracks. Everyone remembers these tracks. The Riverboat Song, The Circle, You've Got It Bad, The Day We Caught the Train and Lining Your Pockets. The Riverboat Song, of course, was the soundtrack to TFI Friday and you couldn't go anywhere without hearing it in 96. Of course, they played loads of great support.
support acts as well. They were a support act for loads of great bands around that time as well. So if you went to see Oasis, the chances are you saw Ocean Colour Scene. The Day We Caught the Train, what a sing-along song, murdered by many on karaoke. It made it to number four, and You've Got It Bad in the Circle both went into the top 10 too. You can't really go and talk about this album without mentioning the 60s influence, part of Britpop's British music revival. Loads of unapologetic guitars, proper lead guitar lines and solos and licks. Steve Craddock, what a guitar player, a virtuoso guitarist, and that's why Paul Weller relied on him so heavily as one of his most trusted guitarists in his bands too. The Day We Caught the Train took its lyrical influence from The Who's Quadrophenia. You can understand where all that inspiration was coming from in the music. They were signed to MCA and they were planning to release One for the Road as a single too, but the band decided to hold back and focus on the follow-up, Marching Already. They are big Brummies, you can hear it in the voice. Simon Fowler, you know, he wanted to be a football commentator, that's what his dream was, or to be a journalist, but did all right, didn't he, in the Ocean Colour Scene. Birmingham Boys, and they even named their studio Mosley Shows after this album. April 2016, the album was re-released as part of Record Store Day. It was on limited edition red vinyl and it went in at number five, a big success again. It's got Paul Weller, as I mentioned earlier, the Modfathers on organ, guitar, piano and vocals. They are part of the same gang, and what a gang they are. Brilliant stuff. Right, so two songs for you as part of the classic album chat from that brilliant album, 1996, nearly 22 years ago now. Mosley Shows, I've got The Circle for you and The Riverboat Song. Enjoy.
The Evening Show. Classic album of the week.
X. Radio.
Radio.
X. The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
I'm Gordon Smart doing classic albums on Radio X. Two great messages from Stephen Monkhouse and Ben Webster. Classic album, loving that.
The Evening Show. Classic album of the week.
X.
So our classic album chat tonight on Radio X has been about Mosley Shoals, 1996, 22 years old, peak Britpop. I just played you The Riverboat Song, which was the first single and, of course, made popular by Chris Evans and TFI Friday. An homage to Led Zeppelin's Four Sticks, Ocean Colour Scene borrowed really, really heavily from that riff and some of the lyrics, and even the time signature. So unlike most rock music, that's standard 4-4 timing, right? For those of you into your music, The Riverboat Song is in 6-8, which is a swing song, I believe. Before that, I played The Circle. The album was re-released with a second CD, full of B-sides and acoustic versions. The record labels really knew how to get money out of us when I was a teenager. Acoustic versions of The Circle and The Day We Caught the Train, which were brilliant. And a few years ago, Simon Fowler came in here and played The Day We Caught the Train on acoustic guitar, and it was brilliant. Beautiful moment. The word Mosley from Mosley Shoals is taken from a suburb of the same name in South Birmingham in UK, where three of the band members were born. I believe it's a big student area as well. The album title, as a whole though, is a punning nod to the city of Muscle Shoals in Alabama, the location of several famous 1960s soul recording studios, which I learned today. Thank you, producer Vin, for that one. The album cover is the band posing in front of a memorial. It's the Jefferson Memorial in the Jefferson Gardens in Leamington Spa, UK. And if you're of the same vintage as me, you will always remember those little inserts in the CDs you got to join the fan clubs of those bands, always on the inside. And where was the address? It was always Leamington Spa. That was classic album chat tonight on Radio X. Mosley Shoals from Ocean Colour Scene. More next week.
Radio.
Radio.
X.
The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
Now, I'm about to play you some Arctic Monkeys, and good old Alex Turner has been in the news for a completely ridiculous reason. If you've seen a picture of him recently, you will see that he has been wearing a bit of fur on his face recently. He's getting a mixed response, to put it politely. One fan is not having any of it. Monkeys fan Eva Lynn has started a petition urging him to remove his visually unappealing beard. Now, I'm going to read this out in full because it's brilliantly written, beautifully written. So Eva Lynn says, Alex Turner, the critically acclaimed and adored by many lead singer of the Arctic Monkeys, had the opportunity to age like fine wine. It all went so dreadfully wrong, however, when he decided to grow a beard. Maybe he likes his beard. Maybe it's part of his creative process. Maybe we would all do it if we had to get over Alexa Chung. Oof, that's unnecessary. Anyway, while all of these are fair enough reasons, the beard is ultimately to Mr. Turner's detriment. I wonder if this character's a lawyer. Beautifully written. Anyway, visually unappealing, its ginger colour strikes you, and not in a good way, contrasting with his famously deep brown eyes and hair. Genetics gave him many opportunities in this life. An iconic singing voice, facial structure that could cut a man. They did not, however, give him the opportunity to look good with a beard, or even to properly grow one. But God loves a trier. And so he tried, and I'm not too sure if he knows how miserable the visual result is. This is brutal. Perhaps even more vitally, Alex has let himself into a giant summer tour, spanning many European countries this year. If this beard keeps growing, will us fans even be able to hear that voice from behind the beard? That's a good point. He doesn't look good on the dance floor anymore. Oof, that's one other person who signed the petition. While another one's added, his beauty is being eclipsed by that beard. Harsh. Anyway, I'll let you into a little Radio X secret. Alex Turner used to listen in when he was, it was around the time of probably the third album. And we used to crucify Miles Kane regularly for his fashion choices. There was once a leather suit as part of his ensemble. I'm not joking yet. Also, loafers without socks were quite popular. And Alex used to take a bit of pleasure from that. So how does it feel with a loafer on the other sockless foot, Alex? Not very nice, is it?
Radio X.
The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
There's an artist in the studio this evening who we've been keeping an eye on for a long time. He was our record of the week last week. Got an amazing response to all that as well. It's the wonderful Tom Grennan. Hi, Tom.
Hello, mate. How are you?
This is a long time coming, isn't it?
I know, man.
It's about a year, actually, since I saw you performing at this feeling, and it blew my mind that night. What a gig.
What a night.
Yeah.
It was a good night after as well.
Well, I showed my age. I went home, but I believe you rumbled on for 2 days.
I believe I probably did, yeah. It was a good night, man.
Last week when we did the record of the week, what a brilliant response. What does that, you know, try and articulate emotions for me when you start to hear your music being played regularly on the radio. It must be a pretty special thing.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's a dream come true, I suppose. And like, especially like when my mum and my dad and people from like home, they're texting me, he's going, your music's on the radio, music. So yeah, it's special, man.
Has there been an unusual moment where you've heard the song yourself, you know, when you've been at a service station or something like that?
I was walking down the road and someone was playing it out of their car, which is a bit weird.
That's me.
Yeah.
It's an exciting time. So this feeling gig, right, that was incredible. And one of the other ones that I thought really stood out last year was the show at the Scala, which kind of, it felt like the moment that you were really announced into the world. But can you tell me one that's gone horribly wrong? Can you share your worst gig with us?
Oh, gosh. There's been a few. My worst ever gig would probably be in Brighton.
Yeah.
I think it was Great Escape Festival. Fire alarms started going off.
Oh no.
So the whole building had to be evacuated.
So what do you do in that? Do you just try and carry on, or do you just...
I thought it was something on stage, so I was looking at my keys player. I was like, yo, is that you? Yeah, and he was like, that's not me. And then like, everyone was kind of like listening out what was going on, and then it was the fire alarm, so all got evacuated.
Oh no.
And then we tried coming back in and doing the gig after, but it just wasn't the same.
It was gone.
The feeling was gone. Everyone was just annoyed
So this is a really special record for us here at Radio X. Absolutely outstanding. Tom Grennan's debut. We've been playing it a lot on Radio X. It's getting a huge response. But I'll leave it to the man himself. Tom, would you like to do the honours and introduce it?
Yeah, man. This is Tom Grennan. You're listening to Sober on Radio X.
The way you stand there in your free striped shell toes and
Radio X.
The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
What a fantastic tune that is. Tom Grennan, Sober. It's brilliant, mate. What a brilliant way to announce yourself on the stage.
Yeah, thank you, man.
Do you look after those pipes, seriously?
Because I try to. It's my goal.
It's your living, mate.
Or
you could return to your... If you're still young enough to pick up the football pedigree, because you were at Luton Town, weren't you?
I was for a while, yeah.
Yeah, what was that What was that like playing, you know, as a youth player at the moment when all the money's floating around football? Even at, you know, Luton Town's level, it's good money around the dressing room, I'd imagine.
Yeah, but I'd imagine so, yeah. I played for Luton Town, which was wicked. Like, my experience at Luton was wicked. And then I went off to like Stevenage for a while and was managed by Luther Blissett.
Yes, the great Luther Blissett, yeah.
Yeah, he ended up kicking me out.
Did he?
Yeah.
Was that a clash of personalities?
I think so, yeah. And like my attitude as a young boy was stunk, really.
Really?
But I never really played against anyone who made it, but I did. One of my mates from Luton got bought by Liverpool, went and watched him play, and then we saw like Sturridge at young ages.
Incredible.
So, and watching like the likes of Sterling at like 16, we were like, wow, that's different class, that's different level. So,
yeah. So I remember you saying to me before, it's not about musical instruments. If you had the money lying around, you'd buy a lot of football boots.
Oh, 100%, mate. I'd be all on the Predators. I'm a Predator man. So, yeah.
Glass cases with lots of boots.
Yeah, man.
Right, Tom, you're right to stick around a little bit longer?
100%, man.
More from the world-class Tom Grennan in just a second.
Radio.
Radio.
X. The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
Nicky Wire and James Dean Bradfield are here, and I teased you a second ago about gigs. We're not interested in all the amazing headline sets, all those wonderful gigs at King Tut's. I want to know about a gig that makes your blood run cold, the one that wakes you up at 4 o'clock in the morning. Would you share with us a moment where things didn't go to plan for the Manic Street Preachers on stage?
I'll go first, shall I?
There's one there.
It was the launch gig for Postcards from a Young Man.
Right.
It was Hammersmith Working Men's Club.
Oh, well.
And it was the launch gig with lots of media there, yeah. And like, you know, a selected amount of like, you know, hardcore Manics fans. I was ready. I was pumped. I was ready. I was just like, you know, I'm in the zone.
First time we'd ever played new tracks.
And like, you know, I was like, I was sports psychologist, like, you know, just like prime, ready. Yeah. You know, I'm ready for the challenge. I just forgot everything.
Oh, no.
I forgot everything. And I started pretending. So kind of like, you know, I was going over to Nick. What's the first line of this song?
Oh, no.
It was amazing. He grabbed me at one point and he goes, what's the first line of Kevin Carter? It's gone. It's gone.
It was I had a complete and brain freeze, just like as Americans say. It was just, and I started saying, sorry, it's a technical problem. That's why I just, and people weren't buying it by the end.
Oh, we had to start one song 3 days.
Yeah.
The Descent.
Yeah. I had lots of people, lots of friends there. My wife was there. I went out in the car park and just sat against the transit and just stayed into the distance for 40 minutes, and it was freezing outside. It was a disaster.
James, thanks for being so magnanimous and kind to share that horrible moment.
It was like watching the biggest idiot in the world try to like sing in front of a band.
I feel uncomfortable for you. That's bad.
It's cool.
Nicky, have you got one that you'd like to share?
Well, the greatest one. So we did 2 gigs in a day. I forget. I think it was a Belgium and maybe Luxembourg, and Richie had peaked too early in terms of the Johnny Walker black label or red label, I can't remember.
Black.
Hardcore.
Yeah.
Anyway, when we got to the second gig, which was it was in someone's back garden. That's the only way I can describe it. There was barely anyone watching. Richie decided to stage dive, but there was no one there.
Oh, no.
So he literally does a semi somersault and lands on his head. Luckily, it was a garden. So he had a big tuft of grass sticking. It sobered him up. Character building.
It was character building.
Yeah.
And we all had a good laugh.
Radio. Radio. X. The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
Gents, you've changed the way I pronounce the word emptiness. And I can't say I design for life without saying I design for... You've changed the pattern of English.
Sorry. That's... actually quite an achievement.
It is.
Yeah.
Emptiness will never be the same for me. Now, gentlemen, I'm writing a book called Slash Gordon about awkward encounters in bathrooms, so would you please help me with the new chapter, the Welsh chapter? Are there any awkward encounters that you found yourself having, James?
I was in New York, I think it was 93, 92. I think we were playing, and we were in a bar across the road from where we were playing. I was in there with Martin, our manager. I went into the bathroom. And then kind of like, it was just somebody else. And then it was a novelist called Seth Morgan. He was just taking a slash at the urinals kind of thing. And he had a book, quite a celebrated book that had come out called Homeboy. And he was quite celebrated at the time because he was a kind of a bit of a bad boy, a reformed bad boy that had kind of like come good and written this novel. And it's just very short. I just, I was at the sinks, not at the urinal, and I was washing my hands. I said, really liked Homeboy. And he just went, "F off, kid."
Which is great.
Which is really good.
That's what you want, though, isn't it? From a character like that. Nicky, have you got one for us?
No, I have met. There's been awkward. There's not much dialogue involved. When we played Cuba, for instance, one of my heroes, the triple Olympic boxing heavyweight champion Felix Savon, was an amazing dancer.
Was.
While I think
absolutely
of it.
Amazing.
We had an after show after meeting Castro and doing the gig. Then we had an
after show. 6 foot six or something as well,
isn't
it? Yeah.
So he was there, and Alberto Wantarino was there, who was one of my favourite athletes of all time. The only Olympic champion ever to win the 400 and the 800 in the men's.
That's great knowledge.
Now, if we can only get them in a toilet.
Well, they were. Felix Savon was in the toilet.
Right, yeah. Gotcha.
And I wanted to ask for his autograph. Mm. He's gigantic, massive, amazingly graceful. But I just shit out. And I didn't go at the toilet either. I just got too nervous.
They're excellent.
And that was it.
Two brilliant slash. Thank you very much, gents. Och, I'd like you to stay all night and blather away, but I'm sure we can do it again in the future.
Absolutely.
I'd like to wish Wales all the very best with Ryan Giggs. And the Six Nations as well. Gents, the new album's just on the horizon as well. The Resistance is Futile is called, another really serious and thoughtful title. Well done on that one. Are you going to run out of these at some point?
No, I mean, it's one thing that I haven't fallen out of love with is words. Words are still the thing that keep me going. So titles are not a problem. Playing the bass is the problem.
You know what, Chance? It's been a pleasure having you. And thank you very much. Manic Street Preachers.
Radio X. The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
Quincy Jones, of course, is a legendary producer. No doubt about that. He has played a pivotal part in more than one multi-million selling album. The artists he's worked with are as diverse as Michael Jackson, Frank Sinatra, everybody really. He's worked with them all. But one group he didn't rate were the Beatles. He said, and these are his words, they were the worst musicians in the world. Paul was the worst bass player I've ever heard, and Ringo, don't even talk about it. Now, I can't tell from the printed word if he's kidding, but it's not really a quote with much room for interpretation, is it, when you hear it? Now, Quincy Jones met Macca when he was 21, so he'd obviously improved a little bit by the time they worked together on Michael Jackson's version of Girlfriend, which was a song penned by Macca, which ended up in Thriller. You probably know it. Now, he's changed his tune since 2012, because back then, Quincy said of Sir Paul McCartney, there is simply no artist today who has the credibility, grace and depth of character that Paul has. Now, Quincy worked with Ringo, I love this story, when he arranged the track on his debut album from 1970, and Ringo's debut was called Sentimental Journey. So this is Quincy Jones, right? Listen to this little story. I remember once we were in the studio with George Martin, and Ringo had taken 3 hours for a very simple four-bar thing he was trying to fix in a song. He just couldn't get it. We said, mate, why don't you go and get some lager and lime, some shepherd's pie and take an hour and a half and relax a little bit? So he did, and we called a jazz drummer who came in for 15 minutes and tore it up. Ringo comes back and says, George, can you play it back for me one more time? Anyway, George does. Ringo says, that didn't sound so bad. And I said, yeah, because it ain't you. Great guy, though. A little bit late for that, Quincy, isn't it?
Radio. X.
The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
Tom, it's brilliant to have you in, and yeah, I'm so chuffed you're doing so well. You know, it's brilliant. It's an exciting time. Now, you've got to help us out, right? Because I've been writing this book called Slash Gordon, Awkward Conversations in the Bathroom with Famous People. We all end up finding ourselves in that position where you reach the point you're at in your career, right?
Yeah.
Have you had one recently since you have found fame?
Yes, I have had a toilet experience. where was I? I think I was in Holland, and I was playing a festival, and our dressing room was next door to Artsy Monkeys. No, it was Last Shadow Puppets.
Yep.
So I was like, wow. And Alex Turner's like a hero of mine. So I was like, wow. So he walked in, and he looked like Elvis Presley to me, man. I was like, wow, look at it, it's Alex Turner. And then I was needing the toilet, so I went toilet to have a wee. And then he walks in and has a wee next to me was Alex Turner. So I was like, I've got to say something here, not bottle it. Yeah. And I've got to be cool about it as well. So he's having a pee, I'm having a pee. I look at him, he looks at me. And then he's like, he nods the head. And I'm like, all I could say was, I'm a massive fan, man. Boom, put the trousers up and
gone.
Just gone.
He's gone.
No, I've gone.
All right.
So I've gone. I'm a massive fan, man. Pulled the trousers up, gone. Walked out as well. I've just bottled it. I've just blown the whole Alex Turner experience. This guy's going to be like, hey, what is this guy doing?
Unfinished business.
Do you know what I mean? So,
oh, man.
Yeah, that was my Alex Turner story.
It was a massive panic.
I did cry after.
Yeah.
And, Alex Turner probably thinks I'm the right bottle job.
Well, you know what? Yeah. The Monkees are coming back with a new album this year. At some point, hopefully they'll come in and we'll mention it to them.
I know, please do.
Yeah, maybe he could come in awkwardly whisper in your ear when you're next bumping in each other on Awards Day.
I'd love that.
Now, listen, Tom, I've seen you playing, right? And it's incredible to see you live, right? So if any of your punters who haven't seen you, where can they come and see you on your tour that's coming up?
Well, the whole tour sold out.
It's gone. It's sold out.
Yeah. But more dates will be announced, and I believe I'll be doing a lot of shows in October time. So
great stuff.
Yeah, I'll be about.
See, when the dates go on sale, talk to us, paint a picture of what it's like for you. Are you sitting straight on the speed dial to the management saying, come on, how many have you done so far?
Yeah, basically. Yeah, man. I always want to sell out my tours.
Yeah.
So I'm like, if it doesn't sell out, I'll be so disappointed. You know what I mean? Like whether it's just like 90% sold out and then 10%, but if it's not sold out, I will be disappointed. So I'm always on the phone, how many have you done today? How many, is it sold out? And yeah, luckily this one sold out, but the next one, I think they're bigger venues. So yeah, let's just wait and see. But
it's early enough in your career to ask you this question, right?
Mm-hmm.
On a scale of 1 to 10, how far do you think you're going to go in the full Mariah Carey?
I'm going Mariah Carey.
Are you
going
to go full 10?
I'm going full 10. Yeah, man.
Diva demands.
Diva demands, mate.
That's what comes with talent, you lucky man.
Radio X.
The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
I've dug out a bit of Black Sabbath to play you in a second, just to add a little bit of darkness to the show. I thought we needed some of that. Metal legend Ozzy Osbourne says he's all for a hologram of him going on tour after he's died. That's classic Ozzy, isn't it? He's just announced a final 2-year jaunt around the globe starting in April called No More Tours 2, which is kind of a paradox or an oxymoron, one of the two. The Prince of Darkness joked, "If I'm gone, I don't have a say in the matter. Can't complain. I am the Prince of Darkness and I will haunt you. Go ruddy wild." I changed the word there. Wonder if you spotted which one. So Ozzy added, "I'm definitely not retiring. It's no more tours, so I'm just not doing world tours anymore. I'm still going to be doing gigs, but I'm not going on tour for 6 months at a time anymore. I'd like to spend some more time at home." And quite right too, Ozzy. Let's have a little bit of Black Sabbath right now on the evening show, Paranoid.
Radio X.